Hi everyone, and welcome to the final episode of season 2 of the Charity Comms podcast, where we'll be discussing all things well-being. As you know, things have changed this season, and we will be having a guest host take over each episode. They'll be inviting 3 guests who will be interviewed about various topics surrounding well-being. This episode will be hosted by our final guest host, Bevis Mann, who is Head of Marketing Communications at Hatch. Bevis has more than 14 years of experience working in media and communications within the third sector. He'll be talking to his guests about investing in staff well-being and leading from the top. His guests are Chris O'Sullivan, Head of Fundraising and Comms at Mental Health Foundation, Susie Seck, Marketing and Communication Manager at Hatch, and Richard Davison, CEO at Sarcoma UK. So welcome, Bevis.
Hello, nice to be here.
So happy to have you. So let's kick things off. I thought it was only right, as usual, to let you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey as a senior leader.
Well, I guess like a lot of people, I've just been gradually working my way up in terms of like increasingly more senior roles in the comms kind of area of the third sector. So starting off at VSO and then working for British Skin Foundation and then onto Hero Health Charity, an NHS charity based in London. And that, you know, like all roles, they kind of inform and you learn a little bit with every role and you take that kind of learning experience into your next one. And I guess the topic, I guess, of well-being really struck home, mostly between the last 3 roles, the NHS charity role, Imperial Health Charity, and Sarcoma UK, my previous role, and that kind of experience in my current role at Hatch Enterprise. And, you know, working within an NHS environment, you know, the subject of well-being, and I guess the focus is on making people, you know, who are sick or ill better. But equally, I guess we've seen a lot in the pandemic that focus on staff and NHS staff, and what does that mean for them in terms of their well-being and long-term kind of health. And likewise, at Sarcoma UK, and we'll touch a bit when we get to talk to Richard Davison, Sarcoma UK's chief executive, about what he's done and what he's kept and is developing in terms of well-being for staff at that charity and the unique kind of challenges that working in that organization brings. And then most recently, I guess, here at Hatch Enterprise, where I am now, it's about all the challenges that every charity and third sector organization has faced around working remotely, but actually having to work much harder. And all of the challenges and stresses and strains that brings with that and trying to deliver on, at times, you know, less resource, or at least, you know, less able to communicate because you're not able to pick up lots and lots of things that you would have done in person, and all of those things. And how do you try and mitigate some of those, and what are the kind of positive things to come out of that process? And it's been a really interesting, I guess, journey to have spoken to all of the guests, all bringing a very unique kind of perspective to what they've learned and what they've done and how they kind of intend to continue. But what I have seen is certainly increasingly, and not just mental health, what's been clear around the interviews and also what I've seen in the roles, is the role of well-being and mental health and that kind of subject being taken a lot more seriously as the years have gone by. You know, the mental health issue is always in the news, and that's only a good thing. But I guess that what we're talking about here is that full spectrum of well-being, not just mental health, of which that's a part of it, but even, I guess, the smaller things, the day-to-day things that staff can do and actually as leaders can do to encourage well-being, which is as simple as turning off your computer at lunchtime, going for a walk and making sure you're having a proper lunch. I'm as guilty as anyone to kind of just plow on through because I'm, you know, we're working comms and so we're constantly busy. So it's the kind of small things through to the larger things and seeing the organizational approach and seeing that kind of approach be increasingly more integrated into strategy. You know, at Hatch, one of the 5 objectives we have actually is over the next 5 years is around prioritizing people and focusing on, well, how do we make sure as a staff well-being, we're doing the best we can, but we're also developing our staff and so on and so forth. And that's a really good thing to see, where that focus and the topic itself getting the kind of pedestal that it deserves, because at the end of the day, a charity is only as good as its staff.
Amazing. You mentioned, I guess, well-being being taken a lot more seriously in recent times. And I guess I wanted to ask for charities that are struggling and haven't implemented wellbeing practices as easily or as well. What are the kinds of ways they can prioritize wellbeing more widely in their organizations?
I think that in terms of tips or advice, you know, certainly from my own experience, but also having spoken to the guests on the podcast, I would say practice what you preach. If you are going to take it seriously, follow through with what you say. And I think talking to Chris from Mental Health Foundation, that was one thing that I certainly walked away with. You know, that was very clear about what they wanted to do. Talking to Susie at Hatch, the main thing for me was really about taking leadership around staff wellbeing doesn't necessarily actually have to come from a senior leader or a leader. If you care about something and your organization allows it, encourage your staff to actually take the lead on subjects like that, and you'll see them flourish really and take the project and run. And then I guess the final one is really about probably the most important one right at the start. Talk to your staff, you know, figure out what is and isn't working, and then figure out what the appetite is for change and what needs to be done and what people are happy or not happy with. And that's a really good starting block to kind of build on staff wellbeing and developing that.
Amazing advice. Thank you so much, Bevis. And before I hand the episode over to you, could you describe this episode in one word or phrase?
One word, I'd say listen. And that's really about the key thing is around obviously talking to people. But as I said before, listening to what you get back, and that should really inform what you do and how you do it.
Wow. Thank you so much, Bevis. I'm going to hand it over to you.
Chris, thanks for joining us from the Mental Health Foundation and talking about all things wellbeing. Much appreciated. I guess what would be really useful would be for listeners to get a sense of, I guess, what wellbeing and staff wellbeing looks like at the Mental Health Foundation and what your role has been in it.
Hi, Beavis. How are you doing? I am a long-serving member, I guess, of the Foundation staff. I've been around in various roles for just over 10 years. And throughout that time, the Foundation has changed and tried to flex with the times. And over the last few years, we've had a huge opportunity to spring forward as a result of a major legacy. So we've been in a position of planning quite an expansion so that we can really bring our mission on prevention in mental health. So our mission is good mental health for all, you know, to a wider audience. And because our mission is good mental health for all, it really places upon us a requirement to walk our talk. And we've recently framed our values and reframed them and stated them. And there are two, walk our talk and side by side, which are particularly relevant to staff wellbeing. And, you know, it's exceptionally important that our staff feel that they are part of our mission. And that we are part of our mission, and particularly when we offer so much evidence-based content to workplaces about how to look after staff wellbeing, and we also offer consultancy and training programs to businesses, you know, we need to walk that talk. And we've had a commitment to staff wellbeing for a very long time. There's a lot of our staff have a lived experience of mental ill health. We are attractive to people who have a lived experience because people often feel that a mental health charity is a place that they can make a difference, and also a place where they're likely to not have to contend with some of the stigma that you have to contend with in many organizations when you disclose. But we also have a broad range of other lived experiences of the challenges which can affect our well-being, with people from a broad diversity of race, people with LGBT experiences, all sorts of other kinds of experience that mean that well-being is really critical to get the best out of our people. And our head of HR talks about our ambition to be a great place to work where people do great work. And that is very much an ambition and an aspiration. We try to get there. We're not perfect. There are some things that are not ideal, but we're on a conscious journey, and a conscious journey which is very much led from the top with our CEO and our board fully behind that. And that's an exciting place to be.
You mentioned earlier on about the kind of springboard element, and I guess that brings with it certain amounts of pressure, you know, pressure to deliver, but also to kind of make things work. And what has that meant on staff, and how's the kind of pandemic kind of changed all of this?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. In a lot of the years I've been at the Foundation, we've had a kind of scarcity mindset, a need to find the next income, the next grant, the next contract. And that has led to people feeling a need to perform and a need to save the organization, sometimes literally. And over the past couple of years, where we've been able to plan this expansion, thanks to an improved financial picture, a very much improved financial picture, you know, we've had to transition to a growth mindset and almost start to think a little bit like a startup. And how do we frame that, and how do we share that, and how do we make that case for support? And one of the things which is really important within that for us is to make sure that our people remain our key asset. So it's sometimes interesting because I will sit there and think, well, there are things we don't do, and we could do this for staff and we could do that for staff. And then we've expanded our staff complement by nearly 40% in the second half of the pandemic after the hiring freeze was lifted. And what our new staff tell us is actually what we have in place is much more expansive than many organizations in the sector, and indeed the private sector. So maybe just give you a sense of some of the things that we've been doing, particularly in the pandemic, but a lot of the things we were doing beforehand, focusing on mental health and other things. But the pandemic almost, as it has for many workplaces, pushed an accelerator for us, a double accelerator. It pushed an accelerator on mission because the connection between COVID and mental health was so clear, and it allowed us to push forward straight away. So we started a research project on the impact of mental health on COVID in March 2020, when the pandemic first started. And we also started a COVID hub with evidence-based information at the same time, which very quickly was reaching 1 million visits a month and was, you know, widely quoted across media. And that allowed a lot of our people to come together and maybe share disciplines, which was really rewarding. But it was also, there was also an accelerated requirement because of the need to adapt to technology and home working, and also latterly to deal with some very traumatic things, including the death of George Floyd and our desire to be a better anti-racist charity. And we've done a huge amount of work on that. So, you know, what we have in place, we already had quite a few good things. We had a fully provisioned employee assistance program offering information, but also things like counselling and CBT. We have contractual wellbeing days, so we get 3 days to do with what we wish at whatever notice we like. So some people, if they can't face a day for whatever reason, can take a discretionary day without giving an explanation, or you can plan it in for after something difficult. We have a discretionary leave between Christmas and New Year where the office is closed, and that kind of, and things like cycle loans and all those kinds of things. And we also have quite a strong culture of peer support, which has been helpful. And we had just launched before the pandemic a coaching program as well. So all staff have access to group coaching, and leaders and managers and people who are changing roles or under change have access to individual coaching, which has been really good. And since the pandemic, all of those axes have kind of pushed forward. So the flexible work requirements on COVID meant that obviously everyone was working from home. The organization was very quick to provide technology and kit for doing that, very keen to support family, and took the position partly because we were in a good financial position to not have to furlough people, to allow people to do different skills if their jobs, offering people full pay to deliver what they could if they were doing family working. So for example, me and my wife split homeschooling 50-50. So one of us worked the morning, one of us worked the afternoon. Essentially for a good few months, I was working pretty much half of my normal hours and receiving full pay and full backing from the organization, which meant a lot to people. And we've done a lot of team building as well, because we've been recruiting and inducting staff. We've been deliberately setting things up so that people got to talk to not only their existing teams, but also others. And we've had regular wellbeing check-ins. We've built wellbeing into our work in all sorts of areas. And we've had some very hard conversations in a number of places and enabled people to do that. And as we're looking forward now to recovery, we coincidentally, the lease is expired for both our Glasgow and London offices. And we've got a new office in London in the pipeline and a new office in Glasgow in the pipeline. And we're now looking at how we build and equip those offices to put wellbeing at the centre and to maximise what people do in those spaces. So there's a lot happening.
And I guess it's an impressive portfolio of initiatives. And, you know, from an employer, there's a whole load of things there that are kind of huge ticks. And what would you say, you know, as a leader in the charity, What would you say the visible and also non-visible benefits are to staff who are kind of making use of these initiatives?
I think people sometimes don't, that sounds terrible to say, people don't realize how good they've got it, but it may be true when we have all this kind of support available, and it allows us to support quite a diverse experience within the staff team. It allows people a lot of growth potential. And I think whether we have psychological safety or whether we seek to create psychological safety is an interesting idea. So psychological safety is the ability to feel you can have your point heard and make mistakes and learn from them. And I think that is certainly something that you can do in this organization. You're able to, you know, say it as it is to the CEO, and your job is not at risk. And that's not an environment I've always been in. We're attracting and retaining talent in a lot of senses, and we're working on quite a number of change axes at once. It's the change curve, the Kubler-Ross curve or others. It sometimes feels like we've got 10 of those curves in parallel, and sometimes they're intersecting. So there's a lot happening, and I think if we didn't have the focus on well-being we did and the structures and systems we had, we could be in a terrible state, which is not to say that we're always in a great state, because we are changing so rapidly. And I've done work, in my previous job as a head of corporate, I've done work supporting well-being in a number of business environments, including in highly agile startups. And sometimes it feels like that kind of startup environment where things are moving so fast and there are so many challenges and pressures, and defining what it is that you're trying to achieve is hard. So I guess it's not all perfect, but we are moving forward quite quickly. And if we didn't have the protection we have, and, you know, our mission is prevention in mental health, which is basically doing more of the things that support our well-being and fewer of the things that put our well-being at risk. And we're trying earnestly to walk that talk.
And last question from myself, you know, you mentioned just now about that kind of fast moving environment but also having those kind of challenges. And for the benefit of listeners, from your experience and the years that you've been at the Mental Health Foundation, one piece of advice you'd give to other leaders in the kind of comms sphere?
One piece of advice is always hard, so I might make it a couple. You can't serve from an empty vessel. So you need to look after yourself to rest and to recharge, so that you can model the behaviors you want to see from your team. So taking your leave, doing your development, working out what your internal weather is and dressing accordingly, that kind of thing. I would also say learn to live with discomfort. Discomfort is not a thing that we hold well as leaders and managers, but learning to live with failure and learning to live from it, understanding things like power limits, and also what happens when your boundaries are breached, particularly around things like fragility. We've had some great discussions and important discussions on racial justice in our organization, and that's involved confronting our own biases and attitudes, and you need to be prepared to do that as a leader. And I guess the last two quick things: learn to have difficult conversations. So learn to listen and learn to ask questions, and that will help in mental health. And do the basics of management and leadership well. So make sure that you are giving people supervision and appraisal, that people's workloads are manageable, that you make reasonable adjustments, those things which are sort of management 101. And in the days before the pandemic, when I used to go through airports a lot, I used to look at all those management books and sometimes even buy some. And most of those books are about mental health and well-being. You know, the great success, 10-minute MBA, all of those things, every aspect of management and leadership has an aspect of well-being. So embrace that and keep learning.
Chris, a real delight to talk to you, and a huge amount of insight there. So much to chew over the coming weeks. Thanks for talking to us. Susie, thank you for joining us on the Charity Comms podcast to talk about staff well-being. It'd be lovely to hear about who Hatch are, and I guess what prompted you to take the lead in this area of staff well-being at the organisation.
Hi, yeah, I'm really excited to be here. So at Hatch, we support underrepresented entrepreneurs. The groups that we support are women, Black, Asian, ethnic minorities, and social impact entrepreneurs. We do this through a variety of core programs, through our Launchpad, Incubator, and Accelerators, and through events and resources, and also providing an entrepreneurial community. So what prompted me to start the wellbeing at Hatch was that we were currently working on our five-year strategy, and we've been wanting to prioritize people. I've always been interested in wellbeing and self-care, so I had been talking to our operations director, Philippa, about how I would like to be involved in shaping the culture at Hatch and how we'd go about doing it.
And those conversations with the operations director, Susie, what did they lead to? What were the kind of activities that happened as a result?
So one of the activities that I thought of was creating an internal hub for staff to access physical and mental health wellbeing resources. And another thing we did was during Mental Health Awareness Week, we had an internal wellbeing event and we did a variety of different activities. One of them was a day where we self-reflect on our personal professional development, doing a yoga session in the afternoons and meditation, and then send in everyone a little gift just to say thank you for being such a great team member.
Sounds like a really lovely kind of set of gestures there. And why would you say this is an important thing to do? And I guess particularly at Hatch.
So I think over the past year with the pandemic, like mental health and self-care has been like at the top of everyone's agenda. And I think that a lot of the time with charities, everyone is like so focused on the mission that staff well-being becomes less of a priority. But I think it's so important because if people are stressed and burnt out, then they won't be performing their roles as well as they could be, which will affect the whole organization. So I think nowadays it's so important to think of your people as a priority.
Absolutely bang on there with what you said just now. What was the kind of feedback that you got from staff?
After we did our wellbeing week, we received such positive feedback. Everyone was really thankful for that week, and they felt like they had that time to just like think about where they were with their self-care. And Dirk, our CEO, actually gave me some really good feedback and made me really happy that I did it. Is that the week that we did it, he had been feeling really low, but the 30-minute meditation session had like changed how he felt about that week, and he felt so much better after it.
And we mentioned in our chat before we started the recording, you mentioned that there's something new, which is around a well-being budget. What's that about?
Yeah, so we recently introduced a £750 learning and well-being budget. So this budget is to help our team develop professionally so they can do a course that they want to learn. And the well-being budget and the well-being side is that they can use it to improve themselves personally, so they can access like therapy, or, you know, if they wanted to improve their physical well-being, they could get a gym pass, take themselves on a retreat, or just even read a book that they want to read about mental health and how they can improve themselves.
And the thing I've wanted to, I guess, make a point of is the fact that, Susie, your role is marketing and communications manager at Hatch. So you're not a member of the senior leadership or a senior management team where, I guess, traditionally lots of these kind of initiatives might stem from initially. What would you say to others who aren't in those kind of roles about taking the initiative and just doing this at their own charities?
Yeah, I think if it's something you're passionate about, kind of research into what other charities are doing and then kind of gather some stats or whatever and then bring it up in a team meeting and say why mental health and physical well-being is so important to the organization. Just get everyone's thoughts and ideas and kind of gauge if it's something that they're interested in, and then put this into a plan.
My last question to you, looking ahead, what's the kind of future look like in terms of staff well-being and this kind of unique types of investment?
Yeah, I think we would want to do more regular events, so maybe like every other month, and then keep bringing up that mental health is so important, so just take regular breaks, get away from your screen, and just give everyone that reminder. I'd eventually like to get to the point where staff mental health is talked about and normalized.
Perfect. Lots of rich insight there, Susie, and lots to think about as well. I'm really lovely to hear about all the things that you've done over the past few months at Hatch, especially, I guess, as you say, at this kind of pre, during and now post-pandemic times. Lovely to talk to you, Susie. Richard, thanks for joining us today on Charity Commons podcast, talking about all things well-being and leadership. I guess it probably makes sense to the listener to just maybe just tell us briefly about what the setup is in terms of well-being at Sarcoma UK and what kind of initiatives you've got running.
So we are a charity of about 20 people. Most are normally in normal times office-based, but of course we've all been working remotely. One of the things that we have at Sarcoma UK is we have a counsellor, because we deal with lots of dying, death, ill patients, end-of-life care. So we come into contact with a lot of patients, and one of the things that we have is a counsellor that comes in once a month, and she has one-to-one or group sessions helping staff deal with and talk through issues that they are dealing with in their day-to-day jobs. It's a fantastic woman called Jo Ham, who is a trained counsellor, and she's been involved with the charity for about 10 years, actually, so since the charity was established. And she runs a really popular offer, a really popular service where people can call her when they're feeling that they need to talk to someone, they need to talk through an issue, and sometimes it's in a one-to-one basis and sometimes it's in group sessions. But one of the things that we've done with Jo during the pandemic is we've introduced once a month, she comes to our team meetings and she does a mindfulness session. So she talks through a mindfulness group and everyone in the team attends, and it's integrated into the team meeting. So it's led by her, but everyone gets involved, and it's gone really, really well. People find it popular. We survey people regularly to make sure that it's what they want and that they're getting the most out of it. And it's a really popular session.
Do you find, in terms of the members of the Sarcoma UK team, there are particular groups of people that always go, or is there kind of is part of it mandatory for certain members of staff?
So people, it's mainly for people who have got direct contact with patients. So it's, you know, it's for people who work on the support line or community fundraisers, but it's open to all. People who answer the phones, but it's open to everyone. So there tends to be set people who go more regularly, but it is open to everyone in the team, because everyone gets a value of it. And also, you can't always second guess how it will impact members of the team. And so some people might have more contact with the public, but it might be the people who deal with them less regularly that will get the most out of it. So we opened it up to the whole team rather than just key individuals.
And you mentioned earlier on about the kind of members of staff being on that front line and talking to patients. And obviously, what's the kind of impact that kind of contact has on staff?
I think in normal times, it can be quite relentless, because, I mean, at the moment, we're dealing with lots of people who are end of life and who have terminal diagnoses. And that's really difficult. So it's always valuable. However, during the pandemic, where I think people's anxieties and isolation have been heightened, it's even more important, because they can't necessarily see their colleagues, that they have a safe space to go to someone and they talk through how they're feeling. And sometimes that is around difficult conversations, emotional conversations that they're having or dealing with. But sometimes it's just, you know, an ear, it's someone to a shoulder to lean on, it's to talk through someone who's got experience in those areas that you just want to talk to. So it's vital at any time, but it's even more vital at the moment when anxiety levels, I think, are through the roof.
And I guess as Sarcoma UK's chief executive, what kind of impact in terms of benefits, I guess, what do they get out of this whole process? Do you see a change in terms of mood, behavior, productivity? What's the kind of benefits that this brings to, I guess, both individuals and I guess wider organizational perspective?
As chief executive of Sarcoma UK, duty of care to all the team. So even on a very basic level, on a human level, it's really good that we're supporting staff and we're making sure that they feel supported and cared for. But also, I do think it helps people feel more productive if they can deal with certain issues in a particular way and move on or deal with them in a way that helps them get their heads around it, move on and feel less anxious and less worried and less uncertain, because I think all of that side of things leads to certain uncertainty and anxiety. So anything that helps people deal with that will make them happier, more productive staff. And what we've seen at Sarcoma UK is that it doesn't lead to people who have been going to Jo Ham, who have been working at the charity for 8-10 years, who are still there. So I think it's valued by both older, more established staff and newer staff that come into the organisation. And I suppose, essentially, it might even be a draw to the organisation, because people see that we are caring for our staff, and we're looking after their well-being so that they want to kind of stay with the charity.
And what's worked, and I guess what's worked and what hasn't worked around this process? I guess Joe, councillor, the councillor, has been there for a number of years now, so then there must be some kind of learnings, I guess, about how you might maybe approach the subject or how you introduce kind of going to a councillor. Or is it just an everyday thing that's because it's so integrated? What would you say the learnings are?
Well, I think that Joe does a really good job, not just with established staff, and people know what they can go and talk to her about. They know how they react and Joe knows them as individuals. So all of that is kind of a continuous process. But I think that what we also try and do is pick up from those sessions and develop other things. So, for example, we've just done a group session on emotional resilience and on dealing with emotional conversations. So to kind of tease out some of the ways, some of the calming mechanisms that people can use, some of the ways of approaching, so even some of the turn of phrases that people can use in conversations to move things on. And Jo does other training for us at she does a telephone training, how to deal with telephone calls. But those all come from having those long established relationships with the team. So that can be picked up through those, you know, one-to-one and group sessions. We can identify kind of across the board training needs that we have as an organization, and Joe delivers those. And it really does feel as if Joe is a member of the team, that although she doesn't work very many hours, you know, and we go to her on a weekly, fortnightly and monthly basis, but you know, we invite her to the Christmas parties, we invite her to away days, she even speaks at the Sarcoma UK conferences, you know, when we're dealing with patients and so on. So she feels like an integrated part of the team.
And as a leader yourself, do you go to Joe, you know, I can imagine being a chief executive, but also, you know, the charity that Sarcoma UK is, you also have contacts with patients and so on and so forth. I'm guessing you would visit and talk to Joe in the same way that any other more junior members of staff would.
Yeah, and I think that Joe is incredibly obviously it's all confidential, you know, when you go to speak to Joe and you have conversations, it's all completely confidential and none of it comes back to other, you know, line managers or whatever. So she provides a great service to everyone across the organization, and I think that everyone at various points, you know, of their working life, you know, needs to seek Jo out and have conversations and advice for her. So she does that on a kind of a weekly and fortnightly basis. But she is incredibly wise counsel. And so she will, in a non-judgmental way, help you talk through and help work through certain issues. And everyone in the organisation, I think goes to her at some point.
And I guess looking ahead, what's the plan for the future in terms of, will you continue to invest in this way to your staff, but also are there kind of different types of wellbeing initiatives that you think, right, they seem to really kind of resonate with members of staff? What's the kind of future look like in terms of that side of things?
Well, I think the pandemic's made everyone think more, certainly personally speaking, it's made us think all about what do we need to do to help support staff and think about their well-being. So we introduced periodically every 4 to 6 months, we'll have a taking stock day where we try to do it around people's objective settings so that it kind of works with that. But it's very much a chance to put on one day, have no meetings, have no email, and just think about what you've achieved, what your objectives are, and how you want to change things moving forward. And that is everything. So it's not just about work objectives. It's also about, you know, how you're coping, how your work-life balance is, and so on. And then after that, we ask people to kind of offer learnings and so on, so they can, you know, we can think about what they've learned and achieved through that process. But we've also set up a well-being group. And I think that's the really important thing for us, that it's not what we think is the well-being of staff should be about, it's about what they want. And this well-being group deal with lots of different things. They talk about how they want to do team building, how we're dealing with home working, how often we want to come back into the office, how we want the office environment to work, you know, whether or not it's different teams in on different days or whether it's across the team, how we get to speak to and interact with other members of different teams. And so that wellbeing group has come about, and actually it's been quite interesting what they have come up with, because they've come up with stuff that I would never have dreamed, you know, are things that staff would want. For example, they recently came up with the idea that as a way of doing a team building activity, we would do origami. So we did origami, a guy came and gave us a talk on origami, and we all made various different, you know, animals from bits of paper, which was just great. And I would never in a million years have dreamed of doing that. But we did chocolate tasting, you know, wine tasting. So there's lots of different activities that the group has come up with. And it's, you know, a really nice mix of people from across the organization. That's something that I think is something that we would want to continue and want to, because that is a way of making the team come up with solutions to well-being that I think the senior staff, the senior team just would never in a million years come up with. So I think that's probably the future of that type of activity.
And listen to you speak there about the kind of range of activities and this kind of, I guess we've been describing it as a type of investment in staff. I'm distinctly aware that, having spoken to lots of different people from different charities in comms and outside of comms, that not every charity has this kind of support available, whether it's a counsellor, whether it's time, you know, time and space to kind of think through things in the same way that you've described. What would be your one piece of advice for other leaders around, I guess, putting you know, investment behind well-being?
My only piece of advice would be just do it. Just think, take a step back and think about what it is that you want and how much of a sense of well-being your staff or your team have, and really do focus on it. Because I think that the pandemic has shown us that people are feeling brittle and anxious and worried and concerned in ways that they wouldn't normally necessarily be able to talk about. And I think that we need to be able to allow people to talk about it, to acknowledge it. So I do a weekly email, and I often talk in that about what I'm feeling anxious about, or what I'm feeling worried about, whether it's about the country opening up, or whether it's about going into it, or missing certain things, because people can feel anxious about, you know, all types of things. Some people can feel anxious about the world opening up and things going back to normal, and other people can be feeling about the fact it's not going fast enough, or it's not going back to normal enough. So everyone is different. So I think being open and honest about your own anxieties and worries, but also encouraging other people to think about theirs and think about ways that they think we can improve as an organisation, because we're really committed to well-being and care of our staff. We think it's valuable for them, but we think it's valuable for Sarcoma UK and for the patients that we serve. So I would just encourage everyone to invest in it.
Richard, it's been lovely talking to you, and clearly lots of really good things to learn from Sarcoma UK and their approach to well-being. So thank you again.
What a way to end the series. A big thank you to Bevis, Richard, Susie and Chris for giving their thoughts about leading from the top. This whole season has been put together to encourage everyone to take responsibility of their well-being, whether it's their own or their team's. So we hope you feel encouraged and will go away and implement some of the things you've learned. As we have mentioned throughout the season, our well-being guide for comms professionals is for everyone, whether you're a sole communicator or you work in a team of 20. Every article in there is written to help anyone at any stage of their career and with every organisation in mind. It's also a living guide, meaning that it can be added to over time. If you're a charity leading the way when it comes to staff well-being, or you're a mental health professional, then get in touch and share your tips. But that's it for us. This is the final episode of the season. Please keep an eye out on our socials to hear what our next season will be about. Till then, if there's something you'd like to hear about, or if you have any questions for us, you can catch us on Twitter. I'm at Lauren Hazel, or head over to Charity Comms Twitter page at Charity Comms. Alternatively, you can reach me at my Charity Comms email, which is in the episode description. Make sure to subscribe if you'd like to be notified when we upload. And if you enjoyed this episode, we really appreciate a review or rating. So see you next season. Bye.